Welcome to the Balance Bites podcast with Diane Sanfilippo and Liz Wolf. Diane is a New York Times bestselling author of Practical Paleo, The 21-Day Sugar Detox, and co-author of Mediterranean Paleo Cooking. Liz is the best-selling author of Eat the Yolks and The Skintervention Guide. Together, Diane and Liz answer your questions, interview leading health and wellness experts, and share their take on modern paleo living with their signature-friendly and balanced approach. Remember our disclaimer, the materials and content within this podcast are intended as general information only and are not to be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hey friends, welcome to the Balanced Bites podcast. Let's get a quick word in from our episode sponsors. We'd like to thank Vital Choice for supporting our podcast today, and we encourage you to visit their online store at vitalchoice.com. You'll find an amazing array of some of the world's best seafood, including wild Alaskan salmon, halibut, tuna, and cod, as well as sustainably harvested shellfish. These foods are not only delicious, but vital choices for your health. You'll also find grass-fed organic Wagyu beef, live fermented foods to promote gut health, wild organic blueberries, and dark organic chocolates. Eat better, think better, and feel better with deeply nourishing foods from Vital Choice. They're offering our listeners 15% off any order using code BALANCEDBITES. Remember that orders of $99 or more ship free. All right, so Liz here with Diane as usual. Hi, buddy.
Hey.
And we're recording my last few episodes of the Balanced Bites podcast before I go on leave. So enjoy my voice. Savor
while you can. Alien messing everything up.
Was messing it up.
The alien.
Oh, the alien. The alien. They did a pretty good job. So if you're going to miss me while I'm gone, get Eat the Yolks on audio and, you know.
I listen to audiobooks to fall asleep pretty much every night. I should listen to yours because otherwise I'm listening to Mindy Kaling every night. And
you can fall asleep to Mindy Kaling's voice.
You know what helps me fall asleep? If I'm listening to something that I've heard before, because then I'm not anticipating and staying awake to try and hear it. I have a very strange brain that takes very specific ways to like wind it down and get it to stop thinking. And like I could easily fall asleep listening to a movie or a TV show that I've already seen. So it's not like I'm like, what's going to happen next? You know what I mean? I just re-listen to it and yeah.
You need something to literally yank you out of your own thoughts.
Yes. It just never ends.
I don't have that problem.
I'm so annoyed about it. I wish I didn't.
Just put on some like womb sounds, which is a thing, by the way. One of my little crunchy pregnancy groups that I'm a part of, people literally go on YouTube and get like womb tracks.
Wait, for themselves? Because
no,
the baby
for their
already
babies.
Hears it. Don't they already hear them?
But babies are just tiny people, right?
I mean, after they come out?
Yes, Diane.
I saw this video on Facebook that was babies going through tunnels, and it was like babies in the backseat of a car, and somebody would film their faces when it was like outside in the car, and then the car would start to go through a tunnel where it's just dark with weird flashes. And then they all have these like really strange surprise faces.
I cannot believe there are enough videos of babies
there are
tunnels to make a mashup.
It was pretty funny. And I can't believe I watched a video with babies in it.
I can't either.
What?
Very odd.
That does.
Next thing you know, you're going to be asking to hold people's babies.
No.
That's okay. I'm going to have a baby and I'm not even planning on holding other people's babies.
Well,
so
we were just talking about this, how I was like, Liz, I love you. I don't want to hold your baby. I just have no affinity. I know everyone listening is like, I'm never listening to that woman again, but I
No, a lot of people feel that way. I think a lot of people with babies feel that way.
All right. So to our listeners, do you have a baby and did you feel this way before you had a baby and maybe even still now, except perhaps about your own baby? Yeah,
I want to know.
Never had that instinct of like, let me hold the baby. I'm like, nope, I'm good. I'm good over here.
Tag us in your pictures of you not holding babies.
Hashtag not holding a baby.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's perfect.
Not holding a baby. Okay.
We kind of fell off on the hashtags because it was just really hard to come up with them.
It was a lot, but it was fun. I love watching.
Yeah.
We'll just be organic about it. When we have an idea that has obviously nothing to do with nutrition, hashtag not holding a baby.
That's so good. Oh. All right. So what's going on with you besides the fact that you're refusing to hold my baby?
So currently I'm in Nashville and I was rerouted because of some giant storm, Juno, that apparently didn't actually hit New Jersey that hard. So my flight got canceled. By the time this airs, obviously it'll be a little behind, but my flight got canceled 2 days ahead of time. I was like, that's a bit much for the whole meteorologist, you know, how much I rely on them to actually report the weather accurately. I feel like whenever they think there's going to be some crazy huge storm, it really doesn't come true. But so this time, so anyway, just decided to reroute and hang out for a couple days here with my friend Caitlin in Nashville. And so we're just kicking and recording a podcast and having a good time here until I head back to New Jersey. I was in Salt Lake City. I did the event there. It was great to meet everyone there. And then I was in Park City for the Sundance Film Festival, which that's just always a really fun time. I went many years ago, maybe like 2005, 2006, for the first couple of years that I was checking it out and then hadn't gone in a while. And my one friend, Carolyn, she has gone for 12 straight years. So she's like an institution with the whole place. but it's a really fun time and yeah, just kind of a random thing to do. And I know there were a few people who, I don't know if they're podcast listeners or whatever, but I'd seen them on Instagram saying that they were there too. And one of them was like, oh, were you in this movie? I'm like, you should come say hi. Like if you see someone, you know, come say hi. But anyway, so that was fun. And I think basically what's coming up in terms of events, it looks like mid-March, around the 12th to the 16th-ish. So it's that second full weekend in March. I'll be joining our friends Bill and Haley on part of their tour for the release of Make It Paleo 2. So the three cities I'll be in with them will be Alexandria, Virginia, so the D.C. area, and then Charlotte, North Carolina, and Orlando, Florida. So check out Instagram and email lists and all that. That's where I share all the updates exactly on those events and where you can RSVP. But then obviously as soon as I have confirmed dates, I'll share those on the podcast as well. But I think we're actually tweaking the dates that were originally announced. So if you did already RSVP and you didn't see the update, it may be updated because I think they had originally booked these 3 days in a row. I was like, you guys, I don't think we can fly to those cities and like have time to get there and do an event with the schedule. So we rearranged it a little bit. So yeah, I think that's pretty much what's coming up. The 21 Day Sugar Detox coaching program is still in progress. So I know there were a lot of folks who didn't get in on the beta program, which is kind of our test group. We have 130-ish people who are signed up and are doing it as testers where we're kind of working them through a bunch of stuff so that when we release it more officially, you know, the more kinks are worked out and we've kind of planned for a few more things. Obviously, we'll always evolve it over time and improve it, but the early enrollment will probably come in around April. That's my guess. Perhaps late March, but I think the early enrollment is probably not going to come till about April. So just stay tuned for that. And that is it.
Cool.
How about you, my friend? What's going on with you?
Not a lot right now. Just making my way through these last couple of weeks, trying to get everything set to run officially without me. I have a lot of content and stuff like that coming out while I'm gone and while I'm nesting. But yeah, for the most part, I'm trying to kind of tear myself away because really, this pregnancy went really fast. I feel like I just told you I was pregnant. I feel like I just apologized to you and told you I was pregnant. Let's reenact it for people. So I have to tell you something.
Okay, what? Are you pregnant?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's probably what really happened.
I think that's exactly what happened. Yeah, not a lot going on here. Meg, the midwife, and I are still working away on the content for Baby Making and Beyond. It's a ways off, but like I've said to people, people are asking me now, like, how do they get updates? Just go to babymakingandbeyond.com and punch in your email address, and you will get news when we have news. And you can still, I mean, on Instagram, folks have been putting questions out there, asking Meg the midwife and tagging us and stuff like that. So you can do that. You know, we want to know what you want to know. But the actual program itself is just a little ways off.
You're busy making the baby I'm busy. Right now.
And I will not be at Paleo FX.
No.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. I'll be there. That's the end of April, right before my birthday.
It's your birthday?
Yet again.
So exciting.
No, it is not.
The other day, I was who was I talking to? My mom. It's like, well, now that I'm 30, like 30, and then I said the other number, like real quiet after the 30. So you can still say that you're 30. 30 you just have to something. Say the other number in under your breath.
I will be entering my late 30s. Yeah.
Terrible.
Craziness.
All right, so who is the subject of our shout out today?
Oh, so we've got a shout out for Amy Myers. Dr. Myers has a brand new book that, let's see, I guess will have come out last week. I think it just released on January 27th, and we wanted to give her a shout out. Her book is called The Autoimmune Solution, and it lays out a revolutionary functional medicine plan for treating and reversing full spectrum of autoimmune diseases, giving hope to people who have suffered for too long under conventional medicine, which we know we get questions all the time about autoimmunity. I've had Dr. Terry Walls on the show, who I absolutely love Dr. Walls. I just think that she's like such an awesome human. So looking forward to speaking with Dr. Myers. Let's see. I think I'm going to be talking with her what will be next week's episode. So if you're interested in that, or if you don't know if you're interested, you should definitely check out the interview. Anytime we talk about specific, you know, health conditions or really specific topics, the conversations always kind of stray and go to other things. So I think even if the episode's coming up and you're like, well, I don't know if I'm interested in hearing more about the autoimmune stuff, inevitably there will be something pretty revolutionary to learn about from that episode. I mean, I'm just really looking forward to it. So you can check out her website at amymyersmd.com/autoimmune solution book for details on the book, and then stay tuned for our show with her.
Pete's Paleo is a friend of the Balanced Bites podcast, and they also are fans of the 21-Day Sugar Detox. The 21-Day Sugar Detox is great for your body in so many ways, but consistently feeding yourself right can be a challenge. Pete's Paleo makes delicious, seasonal, ready-to-eat meals that strictly follow the 21 DSD program. They're shipped directly to your door, ready to go. Let Pete's Paleo help you with your 21 DSD success, and don't forget that their bacon is also sugar-free. 5 off 21 DSD is your coupon code for $5 off 21 DSD meals, and 5 off Pete's Paleo is your coupon code for $5 off regular Pete's Paleo meals. All right, so how's about a little bit of shout outs? What's our shout out? I gotta scroll down. Did you know that we're gonna shout ourselves out? The Balanced Bites podcast won the Paleo Magazine's Best of 2014 podcast.
I had no idea. How did we find this out?
Because I got my plaque in the mail.
I did not know this, and I have not been home. So I'm
That's
like
a
trying.
Big deal. There are a lot. There's more Paleo podcasts these days than there used to be.
Yeah, and I remember when we started it, someone was like, aren't there enough Paleo podcasts? I was like, listen, you.
I remember that too. Wow.
It was a question on our very first episode. It was something about, have we hit a Paleo podcast critical mass, when there were like 4 Paleo podcasts? Yeah. I think now there's probably a minimum of 12, if not closer to 20. Right. So what were the other podcasts nominated? Do you have a list somewhere, or?
Oh, golly, not right in front of me. I don't. But I think, you know, I know it was close. There's some other great Paleo podcasts out there. I've got the magazine in front of me.
Interesting. I didn't know that we won, but that's very cool. So thank you to our listeners for voting and for listening and for kind of bearing with us through all kinds of crazy stuff that we've done in the last 3+ years. I mean, what are we're coming up on? This is episode 170-something. I mean, it's been well over 3 years. Which is pretty much, as long as we've been doing this podcast, is pretty much as long as we've been friends. I mean, we didn't even really know each other when we started the podcast. Just barely. So
I actually remember I was texting Haley in the bathroom.
Is this a good idea? Should I get involved with this Diane chick?
She's like, I think Diane might reach out to you. And I was like, what? Flush.
What?
Yeah, okay, here we go. Paleo Podcast, Balance Bites. Here's what they said. With a sparkling new format and a new wider range of topics, the Balance Bites Podcast is well into its third year of broadcast. Hosts Diane Sanfilippo and Liz Wolf interview guests and answer listener-submitted questions with frequent Mean Girls references thrown in for good measure. Not even kidding. It's a wealth of information and a whole lot of fun. It's cool that we got a little shout-out for the new format.
Yay, cool. Well, we'll shout-out Dr. Scott for – he's, like, ridiculously talented, like – he's like, how about I help you with the podcast? I was like, okay. And then the next day, maybe I'll make some videos. I have this idea. What do you think? I'm like, yeah, sounds great. And then like, boom, he has 20 videos made. I'm like, who are you? How are you doing this? I don't understand
how people can be so productive.
He's really productive.
It took me all day today to even figure out like some processing thing on getting a video onto YouTube, like all day. Worked on one video and it was already on YouTube. I just couldn't figure out how to do something else with it.
With certain things for sure. There's certain things I'm like crazy fast at, but trying to do anything with videos, I'm like, I want to just not be doing it. Like it takes way too long. My attention span is not that long. So anywho, well, that's very cool. Thank you to all of our listeners and we appreciate you guys a ton. We absolutely love being able to kind of, I don't know, snuggle up with you while you're falling asleep or drive with you to work. And, you know, I listen to a ton of podcasts. Liz, I don't know if you listen to a lot of other podcasts, but I feel a connection with the person who's hosting the show. Like I listen to a lot of business and marketing podcasts. I listen to a lot of food podcasts. And I really love, for me, like the way that we do our podcast is a reflection of what I enjoy in other podcasts. And a lot of that is, you know, practical advice and tips, but it's also sort of the behind the scenes and the personal aspect, because I can definitely listen to something like America's Test Kitchen. And there's a little bit of what's personal, obviously, coming in when they talk about food and the way that, you know, the hosts themselves might do things at home. But there's definitely not a lot of personal stuff going on there, which is fine for that type of show. But I really like listening to some other people's shows where I do get kind of a feeling for who they are and getting to feel like they're just a regular person, you know, along with this other thing that they're maybe kind of an expert in that they're going to teach us something about. So I like that this is the format we've been able to maintain this whole time. And I'm also glad that we've been able to structure a little bit differently and just bring you folks all kinds of information.
So I've been upgraded to a potentially regular person status
on this podcast.
Not just creepy weirdo status.
Were you just like a guest host for the last 3.5 years? What happened?
Apparently I was. Well, I'm glad to know that I'm a normal human. I need to listen to more podcasts. I think they're such a great way to learn. And obviously I like walking, but I love silence so much. I really just love hearing my brains rattle around in my head. So.
Oh, see, that's what it is. That like without distracting my brain with something else, it'll just keep spinning with like all the stuff I have to do or want to do or whatever. Mm. So distracting my brain. Unfortunately, it does lead me to creating more lists of things to do sometimes, but not always. The business podcasts do, but not the food, you know, food nerd ones. So there's that.
All right. Questions?
Questions, concerns, comments, anyone? Oh, yes. I guess some people have had questions.
Apparently. All right. This one's is from Sarah. Not eating paleo yet, doctor says. I have signs of IBS. Do you think he's right? Sarah says, hello. I've only just started listening to your podcast, and I like listening to you both, and I like the advice you give people. I'm not currently following the paleo diet, but find myself wanting to start following this sort of lifestyle. Side note, I really hope people are listening to our podcast like from going backwards versus like I just started listening. I'm on episode 3. So once I get to 177, I'll get the answer to my question. All right. I've been to the doctors who tell me I have signs of IBS, but that's all they have said to me. I definitely don't understand how I can only have signs of this. I find that I get heartburn a lot and sometimes get this sick feeling. Do you have any advice on what you think may be causing this? Could it be a reaction to wheat? I'm 25, I eat small and very often, and I'm only of a small build. Any information you could give me would be great. Thank you, Sarah. I eat particularly healthy, having a lot of oats, salad, meat, and fruit, but do occasionally have bread. I go to Pilates twice a week, walk an hour a day to and from work, sleep pretty well, and take cod liver oil every day.
I love that she walks an hour a day to and from work.
I know.
That's cool.
That's very good.
I love that.
I hope it's in shoes that are tolerable.
Yeah, don't walk to work in any kind of heels. Do the sneaker commuter thing, or like some kind of flat shoe commuter thing, which for many years I thought was crazy, but then I realized it wasn't. So I have a couple of thoughts for Sarah here, a couple of things. Heartburn is not typically a sign of IBS, IBS being irritable bowel syndrome, which all IBS means as a diagnosis is your digestion is irritated. And it's typically meant to be your large intestine, which would be more lower GI symptoms, so gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, that kind of thing, versus heartburn. I don't generally consider heartburn as in isolation as more of a sign of IBS. I don't know what she means by this sick feeling. I might interpret that as the feeling that some people get who don't digest fats that well, where it's a little bit of nausea because they're not releasing enough bile to emulsify the fats. So there's a couple of things here. You know, she says that they're saying signs of IBS. She's like, what does that mean? It's not really a diagnosis. When we look at the way digestion should work as sort of a top-down system, which, you know, this is stuff that I've covered in Practical Paleo in a lot of detail. So if you're like, I don't know what she's talking about, can listen back to old episodes, but grab the book and just, it's like a textbook, so you can follow through it very easily. But if you're having issues with heartburn and that sick feeling, it could be a matter of really having low stomach acid and you're just not really digesting your food that well and not completely. And so the first three things to really consider, number one, when you go to sit down to eat, are you in a rest and digest mode? Are you in that that nervous system state that will allow your body to chill out, digest the food, and not be in fight or flight mode where your body actually sort of funnels energy and efforts away from your digestive system, which you can picture this or kind of feel this when you're working out or doing any type of exercise. If you were a little bit hungry going into it, you sort of lose your appetite while you're doing exercise because you have this mild stress response to exercise that causes your appetite to be suppressed because that's not where your focus of your energy is. So the number one thing would be make sure that you're in a rest and digest state when you go to eat. Number two, that you're really, really chewing your food well. Not only does chewing your food well help to mechanically break it down before it gets down your esophagus into your stomach, so it can take a little bit of pressure off of your stomach acid and the digestive juices that have to start to break that down, but chewing will also signal to your brain, hey, I'm eating, hey, release some hydrochloric acid, stomach acid, and release some digestive enzymes because food is coming, which is one of the reasons I know, Liz, we've mentioned this on previous episodes, you know, gum chewing, I used to chew gum a ton, but people try and do it to stave off their appetite. And I think it's pretty counterintuitive because chewing gum actually tells our brain food is coming, but then we never swallow food and have nutrition come with that gum. Obviously, hopefully we're not swallowing the gum. So
unless that's, it's Big League Chew.
Big League Chew. Oh, my gosh.
And then you just want to swallow it.
That stuff was, that was amazing. You used to definitely chew a lot of that.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's getting a rest and digest, making sure you're chewing really, really well. It also helps to initially break down the protein structures, also carbohydrates start to break down when you're physically chewing it. And then also your saliva begins to act upon the carbohydrates to chemically break them down as well. So by the time some of this food is hitting your stomach, it's not just kind of, you know, chunks of food that you've just chewed a couple of times and swallowed. So then the next thing that I would consider, and again, this is all covered in the book, so if you're like losing track of the notes I'm throwing out here, or if you're driving, please don't take notes while you're driving. I would look into a stomach acid supplement for a little while. It's HCL or hydrochloric acid, but that's something that I would only consider after you do the first two steps and make sure that you're being conscious about them, not, you know, kind of getting crazy about it, but just making sure you're like, wait, am I on the run eating all the time, or am I sitting down and chilling out? Am I chewing my food, or am I not chewing my food? Am I constantly washing it down with tons of water? And then that's kind of the last thought there too, is to make sure that you're not drinking tons of water with your meal, because that will also contribute to reducing stomach acid or suppressing it, which can be another reason for heartburn or indigestion, acid reflux. They're all the same thing. So those are kind of my thoughts there. I don't know if there's some other reason why the doctor's saying signs of IBS. If you had, again, like gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, those are typically much more common signs of IBS.
There's no such thing as a gluten deficiency. If you think something might help and it involves removing certain foods, might as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, that is kind of the basics of paleo. You know, you say that you're not following a paleo diet. It's always worth it to try it for at least a month and just see if a lot of this stuff kind of subsides, where it's gluten specifically, but also just all grains and dairy, you know, refined sugars, and legumes, to kind of pull those out for at least a month and just see how you do. So that would get rid of your oats. You'd need to find an alternate nutrition source. Might I recommend some eggs?
Yes, you may.
So yeah, that's all I've got for Sarah.
All right. This is one we kind of get a lot, but we recycle it because if we get it a lot, we must need to answer it a lot. Career change into nutrition, NTA or Bowman. Hi, ladies. I'm considering an eventual career change into nutrition therapy. I've struggled with my health and want to learn more to help myself as well as assisting others with their health issues. I know you went to different schools and was wondering if you minded comparing and contrasting any positives and negatives about each place. NTA seems more affordable, but is the curriculum as comprehensive as Bowman? I want to find the best education for me. I'm not sure if I want to have a client-based practice. I'm kind of intimidated at having to pimp myself out to get clients, but don't know what other opportunities are out there for someone with a nutritional therapy education. So if you have other career ideas for someone on this path, please share. Thanks so much. I have a really long page on my blog all about this, so we'll just link that in the podcast post. And I say in the post, I really can't speak for Bowman. I don't know enough about it. I chose NTA because it worked for my life goals at the time. And I also talk a ton in that post about how I actually use those credentials, because it is not licensure. It is a certification. It's difficult in some states to be able to legally work one-on-one with people. I did it in New Jersey, which was fine in New Jersey. I worked under a licensed practitioner. I worked with a licensed practitioner. But here in Missouri, I no longer have a one-on-one practice. So it's kind of, and if you're,
if, could you, whole, if you wanted to, or you just don't because you
no,
can't?
I could. Mm-mm. I mean, I'm sure I could do it and be okay, but instead I do it online, like do podcasts, do books, do blogs and stuff like that. And that's the thing. One of the things, I know there are a lot of people that are really successful just working in their own communities. And I say this in my post, that if you've got a gym community, if you've got a church community or whatever, you should be able to draw clients from there. But if you are not so sure about your personal contacts, you kind of have to be able to pimp yourself out in some way or another, whether that's through keeping a blog, making some handouts for people to share, just whatever could get passed around easily and that people could find you. So
yeah, that's, you know, that whole element there. You know, what's funny, when I very first was, I don't know if I was finished with my program at Bowman yet, or I had finished the first of, at the time it was two separate years. And I had some nutrition clients, but I actually was doing business coaching with other nutritionists and other nutrition educators and folks who went through the IIN program. And I don't think I had NTPs at the time, but I was doing a lot of business coaching really early on, because a lot of people have that same reservation where they're definitely interested in learning about nutrition, but then, you know, having a business around it is often pretty intimidating. And for me, that's like the easy part. And working with people one-on-one became something that wasn't really right for me and my personality, but learning the information was definitely, you know, the foundation of all of that. So in talking about the difference in the programs, why don't we just, we've never done this before, where we kind of maybe talk a little bit. I actually have I have a little link open here that goes over what your curriculum was, or at least what it is now. So maybe we can kind of briefly discuss how the curriculum looks for each one. I mean, you've got different modules in the NTA program or NTP mm-hmm. program. I don't know how they refer to it. And then same thing with the Bowman program. But I think we can probably link to these two. There, it's like nutritionaltherapy.com has a course catalog PDF, and the Bowman website also has a whole catalog of the courses there. But how long did it take you to go through that program?
I believe it took me 11 months from the start to the finish. If I had done the reading and some of the work beforehand, it probably would have taken over a year.
So then so when you finish, do they presume that you will be working with a lot of one-on-one clients?
Not necessarily. And actually, a lot of people that go through the program are doing it for the same reason that, what was her name? Missed it. Andrea.
Oh.
Was thinking about wanting to help themselves before they start to help other people. So it's really kind of a foundational, like how the body works and how holistic nutrition plays into that type of program.
Mm-hmm. When I was doing the Bowman program, it was two separate programs. It was a nutrition educator and then a nutrition consultant. So it was an NE and then an NC. And it almost sounds like the NTA program is mostly like what the NE program was for us, with a smattering of the NC program. So we learned, when I look at the curriculum, we learned a lot of what it looks like you guys were learning, but I'm looking at the very end where it says bonus topics, intro to botanical medicine, as like a bonus topic. Mm-hmm. And every section that we went over with any sort of relation to therapeutic interventions, so whether it was about like stress and endocrine information or men's and women's health, liver detox, GI health, I'm looking through the curriculum now, it's not all off the top of my head, blood sugar, weight management, all of that, cardiovascular, mental health, musculoskeletal, immune, cancer, everything. Botanical medicine and Chinese medicine was always addressed in every section. And that's what informed a lot of what I did, obviously, in my practice, and then the recommendations that I put in Practical Paleo, where it's not sort of a one-size-fits-all for every person who might be dealing with, you know, cardiovascular issues, perhaps, but it's recommendations with notes about, like, what do these supplements do? What can these herbs help do? And then each person, it's really up to you or yourself and a practitioner to kind of figure it out. But I think that's what it sounds like to me, but I do think that there are a ton of people who are taking what they have from the NTA program or NTP to that next level, doing a lot of testing. I know that Holly, who's on my team, who's an NTP as well, she does a lot of testing with people. So some of the lab work, the saliva tests and all of that. And I think that it really depends on the person. So what I was going to say also about the Bowman program, which I think this would be pretty similar, you don't have to work one-on-one. You can kind of do like community education. You know, you could just decide you want to teach people about how to eat gluten-free or something like that, you know, and you might not have to work one-on-one with people if that's not really your strength, or if you feel that sort of pimping yourself out is too stressful, you can easily, well, maybe not so easily, but you can definitely move into a position where you're sort of a wellness advisor or nutrition, you know, advisor, practitioner within some kind of other practice, whether it's like a chiropractic office or, you know, a wellness clinic or something like that, where, you know, you can teach classes or kind of work in that capacity. What you're going to do with it, you know, it's really up to each person. But I think just read the curriculum and kind of try and get a grasp on it from there about what you're going to learn. You know, when I look at the topics, some of it does look similar, but then when I go and look at the topics in the Bowman program, they definitely get much more clinical. And so if you want to work with people who, you know, are having specific issues and you want to know, like, what can I tell this person nutritionally beyond sort of eat paleo? You know, because obviously a lot of people listening to our podcast, they already know about eating nutrient-dense food, Weston A. Price, paleo type of diet. I think both programs obviously support most of that on both ends. And I just think it really depends on what you want to learn and how quickly. And then also, yeah, I mean, if the cost is a huge factor and it's like there's no way I'll be able to do the one that's pretty much twice as expensive, then don't do it. But if you read the curriculum for the Bowman program and you're like, I really think this is what I need, then I would wait a little more time and save up the money and do it. Like, I definitely think it's a worthwhile program. I think for anybody who's considering it, I personally think the classroom setting cannot be replaced. You know, they have a distance program. There are plenty of people who are highly, highly successful after having completed the distance program. I have two good friends now who one finished it already and works in, she works in a chain gym, but what she teaches is totally about real food. You know, she doesn't teach about low fat nonsense. And another one who's in it right now. And I have every confidence that they'll do just great with it. So if you can't do a classroom setting, it's fine. But if you have the option to, I would make it happen however you can, because I just think there's something that you can't replace it, you know, having that interaction and kind of, you know, colleagues and all of that. So, and I still am in touch with mostly women, maybe one guy, still in touch with a lot of the people who are in my classes. And it's great to have those connections. So I think it just really depends.
Weekly?
What?
Weekly classes or something?
I think we went once a week for 3 hours. I feel like it was 6 to 9 p.m. like Wednesdays. And then I think we had a few weeks where we had two classes just so that the year didn't go too long. And there were just like a handful where we had to come in twice that week, because I would go right from work. I would leave, you know, work at 5 and be at class at, you know, by 6. And I mean, I was still working full time when I was going through most of that program. So
for the NTP, for the NTC, I believe there's no in-person, but for the NTP, which is what I am, they do have three basically conference weekends. So if you're not local to Bowman, which is, am I right? That's the only way you could actually have that in person if you were somewhere close enough to go to class.
Correct. I do think the majority of their students are not in person, but anyway,
But if you were going to take a class online, the majority of it had to be online, and you wanted to have at least a little bit of, like, not hand to hand, but hands-on type of learning, the NTP program does do the three conference weekends. So you'd have to travel and stay in a hotel and whatnot, but you can kind of maybe get the best of both worlds if you're not able to do the, if you really want some in-person learning, but you're not able to go to Bowman.
The other thing that they introduced to the Bowman program after I was finished with it already was field work. So it's almost like an internship type of thing. And I really don't know what that looks like for people at this stage. When I was still in my second year of the Bowman program when I started teaching classes around the country. Like, I just basically was like, okay, I'm going to start teaching. And I, you know, only taught the things I was really confident that I knew about, but I kind of created my own on-site field work, like, because that's kind of what I do. But I just got out and started teaching already because there was demand. And that was when, you know, it was after Rob Wolf wasn't teaching CrossFit nutrition certs anymore. And there really wasn't a ton out there. And lots of gyms wanted someone to come teach about nutrition. So that's part of what's involved. I think that the Bowman program, it's a really well-rounded, it feels like, I don't know, it feels like a regular type of classroom or a regular type of curriculum. And it's very much, I think with the internship, field work, whatever they're calling it, I think they're very much trying to design it so that you're ready to do the work in that field, so that you don't finish and say, now what? You know, I think that was the point of it, because most people are not like me. Most people are not like finished and already have work lined up. Most people kind of sit like, okay, what do I do now? And so I think that's probably a big benefit for folks that they have that. But yeah, I mean, I think maybe I'll try and see if there's a couple of students who have finished the program more recently that I can find and interview on the show, maybe in an upcoming show, and just see, you know, what they're doing and how the program was. I know I've referred a ton of people. I know you've referred a ton of people to NTA. So maybe we'll figure that out sometime, but yeah.
And just to be real honest, I'm like pregnant and super tired. So everybody just go read my post on on education and career help, because I do have a lot to say about NTA. It was a wonderful program. I loved it. So compare and contrast. Just do more research.
Indeed. The one other thing I'll say about programs in general is that a lot of folks ask us about the IIN program, which mm-hmm. is a school that's based in New York. They have a distance program as well. And I don't know if they have an on-site program still. I feel like somebody said that they stopped doing it. I'm not positive. But I have a lot of friends who did that program and absolutely loved it. They love the camaraderie. They love what they learned. They, you know, are using it out there. I think the two closest friends I have who've done it don't have full-time careers in that field currently. I know one other person who does have a full-time, you know, self-employed kind of career doing that. And if you're into paleo and you kind of believe this is the way to eat and this is what you're into, I don't recommend that program because one of the biggest things about their curriculum is teaching you about all the different dietary theories. And I think that if this is kind of already where you've landed and you feel really confident about it, of course, it's always worth it to explore what's out there. But at the end of the day, you're not probably going to recommend a vegan, you know, raw vegan diet to somebody because you probably don't wholeheartedly believe in that. And I don't think it's ideal to kind of sit through a curriculum that you're just in it just because it was, you know, less expensive and easier to do. Like, that's not going to make it worth it. Whereas I think the NTA, you know, versus Bowman, I think the curriculum is pretty similar, but I think she's right. It's just maybe a little more in depth from Bowman. Maybe.
I chose NTA for sure because I loved the curriculum.
It looks great.
It's a spectacular curriculum. I definitely looked at IIN. It just wasn't for me because I did feel like I didn't need to know how to perfect the implementation of diets that I already mm-hmm. did not consider to be optimal. So right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But some people want that kind of background so they can really understand where people are coming from when they're talking about implementing that type of diet. So you never know.
Support for this podcast is provided by Dragonfly Traditions, natural, nourishing skincare with absolutely no unnecessary chemicals. It's natural nutrition for the skin. I am a huge fan of Dragonfly, from their serum to their night cream and everything else the owner Phoebe has created. Your skin will be soft and happy with Dragonfly Traditions. If you head over to dragonflytraditions.com and make a purchase of one or more of their skincare products, you can then add Balanced Bites to your shopping cart for one penny. Phoebe will then not only send you two free lip balms with your order, she'll also send you that penny back. Remember, that's two free lip balms with purchase from Dragonfly Traditions.
All right, next question. Vitamins A and D and keratosis pilaris. Katie says, I'm a new listener to your podcast, and I decided to start at the beginning to get some background on your thoughts and feelings about food. In your second episode, something about the balance of vitamin D and A having something to do with keratosis pilaris. Could you elaborate a little on their relationship with this problem and possible ways of determining if it may be something going on with my diet? I have not started eating paleo, but I began listening to your podcast because of my interest in knowing a little more about it. I typically eat oatmeal with 1 to 2% milk and about a teaspoon of honey each morning, have some sort of salad with rice, beans, meat, egg, greens, carrots, and broccoli for lunch, and a similar salad for dinner, occasionally subbing in fish for the rice and beans. I have a large mug of coffee every morning, and I have yogurt with fruit, apples with peanut butter, nuts, and oranges for snacks throughout the day. I realize there's probably quite a bit you would change about my diet, but what would you recommend specific to KP? Thanks so much. And I liked the rest of her question, which is why I wanted to pop it in here. I'm a community nutritionist with an undergrad in nutritional sciences from Texas A&M. I have long since wholeheartedly believed in the MyPlate diagrams and everything in moderation, but I'm beginning to think this may not be the best approach. I teach cooking and nutrition classes in New Orleans that focus on basic principles according to the USDA guidelines. I've scoffed at my friends doing paleo things in the past, immediately dismissing it as another Atkins. Just listened to a post where you mentioned that most people have misinformation about the Atkins, what Atkins was really all about, and I may owe him an apology, but it may be time to actually see what it's all about.
So,
oh, I love that.
I know. I really liked this question because part of it, you know, I will admit that for many people, the USDA MyPlate would probably be a huge improvement. Not a total Betty, but a vast improvement. So, you know,
we're bringing back Clueless now. It's not just Mean Girls, like the original. It's been not the original.
No. So I thought that was, I have to acknowledge that. I mean, there are people out there that are bringing people off McDonald's and, you know, introducing them to real whole foods. And I think that my plate, while the general attempts by the government to make us healthier have been spectacular failures for one reason or another, and although the nutrient density of the recommendations of the government with the my plate stuff are pretty far below what you would get from just kind of an out of the box paleo diet, like what we talk about, which is really for, I think, a lot of professionals where the rubber meets the road, actually going, and it was this for me before I even jumped into the NTA stuff or became an NTP. I actually did kind of a side by side comparison of what the government recommends and really kind of went on the really good side of what the government recommends. So kind of the most nutrient dense foods I could find on that type of plan. And then an out of the box paleo plan, not even with like the cod liver oil and the liver and all of that stuff, but in comparing the two, in almost every single category, paleo was superior just from a nutrient density point of view. And that I was like, oh wow. So how can we still argue that I need this much rice or this many whole grains and whatnot when you're getting the same nutrients from just kind of a plate that you shuffle around, add some new things, take away a couple other things. So I think it's cool that she's kind of interested in this approach, especially as a teacher and as a professional. And I think where we start getting questions like, well, okay, I'm into the standard American diet stuff. I do the beans and rice. I don't eat any processed food. I don't eat any processed fats, refined sugars, stuff like that. But I'm wondering about this KP on my arms, or I'm wondering why my stomach gets so bloated after I eat, that type of thing. This is the type of stuff that really starts to change the way we think about food, because we start to realize what actual nutrients can do for our bodies versus just, oh, the government says this, uses this epidemiology to prove it, and this is what we should just all do. So the big thing for me, a lot of folks know, is it was my skin. Like healing my skin and getting over acne and balancing my hormones was kind of my buy-in, because I liked the paleo thing. I felt great. But until you really find that thing, that in, where you're like, I wonder if this could make a difference. That's where you start to maybe think about food a little bit differently. And not like, we were right, you were wrong by any means. But it's just interesting, different people's points of entry. So with that having been said, elaborating on the keratosis pilaris stuff.
Back to your question.
Back to the actual question. I just loved it. That was so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to differentiate also, I think this person would really like my book. Eat the Yolks is my book. Katie. Read my book. So the differentiation between fat soluble and water soluble vitamins, of course, I'm sure she knows what that is already. But when I talk about vitamin A, I'm talking about fat soluble vitamin A. I'm talking about preformed vitamin A. So I'm not talking about beta carotene or anything that you would get from fruits and vegetables. I'm talking about the vitamin A that we get from animal products. So that's kind of step one. So if you feel like you're getting a lot of vitamin A, but perhaps you're actually getting beta carotene, maybe your body's not doing a great job of converting beta carotene into fat soluble vitamin A, that conversion is a little bit of a risky thing to rely on. It requires a lot of other nutrients in the body. And I talk about this in my book, Eat the Yolks. So as long as you're getting the right type of vitamin A, you can kind of move on from there. If you are getting enough preformed vitamin A and you've still got this keratosis pilaris issue on your arms, which, sorry, I didn't explain it. It's kind of like that, those chicken skin bumps on the backs of your arms, on your legs. They kind of look like little zits, but you can't really pop them. And you're not getting any vitamin D, you need to think about getting some sun during the summer, getting some vitamin D rich foods like salmon, sardines, maybe some pasture raised lard and that type of thing. Sorry, the baby's moving around a lot and I'm having trouble focusing. Oh, so weird. The alien.
It's very freaky.
I know. I'm pretty sure those are little fingers. So weird. All right. So what was the question? Could you elaborate a little on their relationship with this problem? So I extrapolated a little bit just from my own bank of knowledge about how vitamins D and A work together in the body to activate different proteins and stuff like that, and just made the connection that if we're talking about KP generally being a deficiency in vitamin A, we also always have to think about how those important nutrients interact with other nutrients, because no nutrient exists or acts in isolation. So vitamins A and D work together to do almost everything, as well as vitamin K2. And that was just one of those things that I extrapolated, this idea that if you are getting too much of a good thing, you're probably not actually accomplishing what you want to accomplish in the most direct way. So I guess that's kind of what I have to say. Like I said, I'm having like major issues with pregnancy brain right now. But have I said anything that makes sense, Diane?
Yeah. Minimally. I think the other, you know, with what she's asking about vitamins A and D and, you know, what they have to do with it. I mean, basically that vitamin A deficiency is what we know to be at the root of the keratosis pilaris. However, like what you were saying, it's not necessarily just a flat, you're not taking in enough vitamin A, although that tends to be pretty common, because where we get vitamin A from primarily, you know, liver is a huge source of that, or anything that has beta carotene, which, as you said, is the precursor to the end form retinol vitamin A that we don't eat it in a lot of other foods. I think we can get some from egg yolks. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend that she swap out, you know, some eggs for the oatmeal, you know, eat 2 or 3 hard boiled eggs instead of oatmeal in the morning and see what you experience depending on where she lives, where the vitamin D comes in. And I definitely see this for myself, because I know that vitamin A has such a strong tie to the health of my skin. I absolutely see that when I'm getting more vitamin D, my skin improves, but it's not because of the vitamin D itself. It's because of what vitamin D does to support vitamin A in the body. So, I mean, you can see this when, you know, if you get some sun exposure and your skin clears up more, or if you take vitamin D and your skin tends to get better, which that happened with me a lot when I used to take vitamin D supplements. I used to take like 10,000 IUs of vitamin D a day now and then. I mean, I would do it because the next day I could feel that my skin felt so much better, but I haven't had to do it lately because my skin is way clearer than it used to be. This was maybe 4 years ago, but I thought it was just the vitamin D at the time, but then I realized that it's the way that the vitamin D helps to activate the vitamin A and balance it out and just work synergistically. So I think that all those things are important, and vitamins A and D are some of the toughest to really get, either nutritionally or, you know, obviously lifestyle-wise in the winter for those of us where it's, you know, not sunny all the time. So that's kind of what I would say. And I think that, you know, when she's looking at what she's eating, even if you don't want to think about eating paleo, just think about what can you eat that would get these nutrients into your diet better. And that's where I kind of thought of why don't you try a few eggs in the morning instead of the oatmeal? That's going to give you a lot more nutrition. It's going to give you those nutrients that might help with, you know, with your skin and balance that out again. And, you know, also kind of adding in some liver if you can, a little bit, a couple of times a week if you're having that issue, will probably clear it up pretty quickly. I mean, I think this is what happens for most people once they start getting their nutrition turned around. So yeah, I used to have some of that on the backs of my arms. And I think eating a lot of grass-fed ghee has helped me a lot too, because I can't really do butter without ill effects if I eat too much of it or for too long. But I've been using kind of a ton of grass-fed ghee just for cooking or for whatever else I'm doing. And I think I'm getting my vitamins A and D pretty nicely that way. A little bit of D.
Thank you for picking up that and running with it. I was having some issues over here.
Just blame the alien.
I think there's a lot going on. Okay, Diane, do you have a kitchen tip for us this week?
Well, we had a question, so I figured this would be a good kitchen tip because it seems to be a kitcheny type of thing. So the question was about beef jerky. How long will, I think she's referring to my simple beef jerky recipe and the 21-day sugar detox. How long will it last? Should I keep it in the refrigerator? And what is the serving size? I'm surprised I didn't give more details on the recipe, but perhaps
you never know. Sometimes people stop reading when they come to the question instead of reading on to see if it's answered.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably did not give those
details. To make you feel better.
I know. I didn't write little head notes in the sugar detox book, like the little blurb about the recipe, because when I was doing them for Practical Paleo, by the end, I was like, I don't know what else to tell you about this food. It's yummy. Make it and eat it. But anyway, so simple beef jerky, you'll notice that when you buy beef jerky from, you know, whether it's like Steve's Paleo Goods or Sophia's Survival Food, or sometimes I like this brand called Crave Jerky. They have a pork jerky that's yummy and soy-free and all kinds of jerkies that are out there. Generally, when you buy one that's prepackaged, obviously it's an airtight bag, and it also has one of those little like silica packets in it to help absorb any moisture. And so that's what helps those jerkies keep pretty well for a while in your cupboard. You know, you don't have to refrigerate those. But I do think that jerky that you make at home, I think you should refrigerate it. I think, you know, keeping it in some kind of airtight container will help it stay a little bit softer, a little bit more moist. But generally, as you take it out and kind of carry it with you throughout the day, it'll soften up a little bit and just be a little bit easier to eat. And I don't really know how long you can keep it out of the refrigerator. It's hard to know without knowing exactly how dry it's become for you, because the more moisture that you have left in the jerky, the more prone it is to spoiling. So if you get it really, really dry, the chances of it spoiling on you, you know, today to the next day to 2 days later, just kind of in your bag, probably, you know, pretty slim if it's much more dry. But if it's got a lot more moisture left in it, you know, it's just going to give the opportunity for mold and stuff like that. So I generally do keep it in the fridge, and I generally also will throw it in my purse and have it in there for a couple of days and not think much of it. And you can very easily look at it and smell it. And if it looks like anything's growing or it smells kind of off, those are some good signs that it's gone off. And I think it'll keep for quite a while in the fridge before you finish it. But it just depends on, I mean, I don't think we ever have jerky we make that lasts more than a few days in the fridge if we're not like taking it somewhere, because we just like it and we eat it. And let's see, but I think it'll last, I don't know, several weeks in the fridge once it's dried out as jerky. And then what's a serving size? It depends on what you're eating it for. I mean, if you just need a little snack, I don't know, 1 ounce, 2 ounces, 3 ounces. I'm not that calculating about that stuff. I kind of eat when I'm hungry until I'm not anymore. And that's really as calculated as it gets. But I tend to use jerky for snacks pretty exclusively, unless I'm traveling and I need to use that as my protein source for the meal, because I really like to eat more water-rich foods as my meal as much as possible. And so I will travel with jerky a lot. I think anywhere from 2 to 4 ounces is kind of a good snack size portion of jerky.
You never knew how much there is to know about jerky.
I just was yapping on and on about jerky. Yep. So Liz, do you have a fertility tip for us this week?
Well, golly, Diane, I do.
Golly.
So I'm asked pretty frequently lately whether it's necessary to take a probiotic during pregnancy. And what I have to say about my personal experience is that I was pretty particular about strains and type, both before pregnancy and during pregnancy. And I actually asked Meg the midwife recently what the evidence is actually saying about this. And here's what she said. She said, research seems to be pointing to the conclusion that probiotic supplementation, and by whatever mechanism, I don't have a mechanism for this, but from what we see, it does seem to cross the placenta, it does seem to reach the baby, and is potentially associated with reduced risk of eczema, allergies, sensitivities, and asthma. Now, we've got to be careful, of course, when we interpret studies one way or the other, but Meg does say it's very new science. It probably depends on the strain, the potency, the maternal GI system, but this is yet another thing we'll be exploring in our fertility tips and in baby making and beyond, because there are some strains that are standing out as promising, and it's all just really interesting stuff. But this is very new science, but it's pretty cool for us to be able to have a view of exactly what maternal probiotic state, I guess, can do for the little baby in there.
All right, that's it for this week then. Find Diane at dianesanfilippo.com. Join me at realfoodliz.com and be sure to join our email list for free goodies you don't find anywhere else on our websites. While you're on the internet, leave us an iTunes review. We'll see you next week. They did a pretty good job.